Hello, everybody. I guess it's 8 o'clock, so I want to start on time. Okay, my name is Craig Ramsey. I'm moderator of this session. And we'll start right off with the very first one, Lauren. Come on up.
All right, good morning. So I'm going to start off this session that is really like at 2 p.m. for those of us who are East Coasters. So this is great. I'm Lauren Garcia Chance, and I'm part of the Specialty Crops Research Initiative, Clean Water 3, which works to reduce, remediate, and recycle water for nursery and greenhouse producers. And so that's kind of the background that I'm coming from. And today I'm going to talk about specifically floating treatment wetlands and what they can do in order to help with that remediation of water for greenhouse and nursery growers. So, first of all, what are floating treatment wetlands? That's a kind of a term that's not necessarily prevalent within the horticulture industry yet, although it's an increasing method that's going to be used in the future. So, floating treatment wetlands use a buoyant mat of some sort, and so there's a lot that are already pre-constructed by different industry members who then sell those, or a lot of people create them on their own. But essentially, they all serve the same purpose of elevating the shoots above the water and then allowing the roots to have direct access to the water. And that direct access by the roots to the water then allows it to filter, take up, and absorb different nutrients or other contaminants within the water. So specifically, I'm going to be looking at nutrients. And so these guys have a lot of benefits, such as the fact that they're usually low expense. They can be put into pre-existing ponds. There's no construction that's needed. And then additionally, they can adapt to changing water levels. And so whereas a lot of other water filtration methods need a certain amount of flow or a certain level of water, these can adapt very easily to that. However, despite all these benefits and their great possibility to remediate nutrients from excess fertilizers that may be applied in a greenhouse or nursery situation that then runs off, there are some downsides. So one of those downsides is looking at this graph. You can see on the y-axis the amount of nitrogen that is present within this plant sample, and then on the x-axis is the date over time. And so you can see that the amount of nitrogen within our plant samples increases over time, much like the growth of the plant. However, when the plant begins to reach senescence, or it starts to go into dormancy as it reaches those winter months, then it begins to release those nutrients back into the water. So they begin to break down, release those nutrients, and that's not exactly what we're looking for in a floating treatment wetland, especially when we're looking to remediate those excess nutrients within the runoff. So what a lot of people do is they then harvest these plants at that peak, and they will either compost or burn those plants to get rid of them, or some people even leave them in the entire duration, allow the plants to go ahead and go through their entire phase of life and release those nutrients back in the water. However, for what we're aiming to do, that isn't really a viable option because growers are constantly producing plants, they're constantly releasing nutrients into the water, and so therefore we're looking for something that can consistently take up and remove those plants and then pull them at that peak. So we wanted to look into some different options for that. And so some of the alternatives, instead of either burning or composting or leaving the plant in for the full duration, would be something like using those plants for wetland restoration projects. So this is a growing area in which a lot of the growers have supplied plants for wetland, riverbank, lake restoration projects. Furthermore, since we are working specifically with growers, there's a great opportunity to actually harvest those plants and then potentially resale them. And so these were different ideas that we wanted to look at and see if the viability was there for this to actually be a practice that growers could implement. So we began by actually looking at different plants that we wanted to select to trial for these kinds of opportunities. So we had to meet three criteria, essentially, for plant selection. So the first criteria was that these plants needed to be able to withstand basically wet feet or wet conditions. The second criteria was that they really need to be heavy nitrogen users because we wanted them to remove those excess nitrogen and phosphorus levels that are within our runoff waters. And then finally, we wanted these plants to be viable for either planting in the front yard or for wetland restoration projects. So as you can see, we wound up with some iris, canna, panicum, carex, and agrostis, which these plants are all plants that you might find in your front yard, either as an herbaceous attractive plant or as a ornamental grass as well. Also, these grasses tend to be used very frequently in wetland restoration projects. So the experimental layout was a very straightforward layout where we looked at each of the five plants as a monoculture. So we planted floating treatment wetlands with 20 plants of each monoculture and then set them in a mesocosm. And then we also decided to go ahead and look at some mixtures of these plants as well to determine if a grower was interested in looking at growing more than one of these, does that impact the growth and the ability of the plant to remediate the water? So having done this, we then filled these mesocosms with a spiked 12 parts per million fertilizer solution that allowed us to look at plants that would be exposed to a level similar to that we might find in a nursery runoff. And we took water samples at the end of each week to determine the remediation of those plants on the water itself. So very quickly, I'm going to orient you here with on the y-axis, you can see the cumulative total nitrogen load that was in within each plant. And then on the y-axis, or on the x-axis, we have each of the individual species or mixtures. So essentially what our findings were looking at these different plants was that we were kind of surprised to find that two species in particular, rather than assimilating and taking up and removing nitrogen from the system, they actually did so poorly that they were exporting nitrogen into the system. And so those plants were breaking down, they were dying, they were essentially releasing nitrogen back into our system. And those two plants were Iris and Agrostis. And those two plants surprised us because previous research had actually shown that they were fantastic performers in floating treatment wetland production. And then furthermore, while this was conducted in 2016, my research this past summer, 2017, our iris performed fantastic, and they had a very high nitrogen assimilation rate. So we don't know if this is linked, therefore, to either the producer that we received our plants from, or if it was an environmental condition, or what what might have impacted the performance of these two plants. However, I'm going to redirect your attention to the positive part of this, and that's the right-hand side of the graph, and that's the performance of Panicum virgatum. And Panicum virgatum was removing, over the course of 8 weeks, close to 4 grams of nitrogen per meter squared from our system, and that's a really amazing amount of nitrogen removal from a system. Also, I'd like to briefly talk about what our mixtures did. And if you look at our mixtures, you can see that both our all mixtures, so the mixture of all five plants, and then our grass mixture, our monocrop mixture, performed as kind of an average of those plants that were held within it. And so this is good as well because it essentially tells us that each of the plants are still performing individually how they would in a monoculture, but then you're getting, for those water samples, kind of the average of all the performances of those plants. So it's not necessarily that being in a mixture is going to impact the performance of the individual plants, per se. So what we decided is since these plants were doing so great, at least Panicum and some of these other ones, what do they do then if a grower were to take them and put them into one of those post-harvest situations? So now we know the plants are potentially going to perform well. How do they do afterwards? So we took 5 plants from each monoculture and then transplanted them into one of 2 situations. The first situation being either a direct transplant into a pondside restoration project, and the second being a direct transplant into a container treated with slow-release fertilizer and placed onto an irrigation pad. So we then observed these for an 8-week period and took a rating system from 1 to 5, much as you would with a plant trial, with 1 being close to dead, not looking great at all, 5 being fantastic, resaleable, a consumer would certainly be interested in potentially buying it. So we took these remarks over 8 weeks, and this experiment was done twice. And so our findings were that if you look at the y-axis, this is the average evaluative rating over the 8 weeks, and then the x-axis is the species, and then a comparison of them going into the ground as a restoration project or into a container. And so overall, in all situations except for iris, the container-produced plants were much better than those that were transplanted into the ground for restoration purposes. And we believe that this is for 2 reasons. The first is that those plants received slow-release fertilizer, and they were irrigated. So it mimicked those conditions that they were undergoing in the floating treatment wetland much more closely. The second is that 2016 happened to be an unusually dry year in South Carolina. So our wetland restoration project did not end up being a wetland restoration project, as the water level of our pond ended up receding far beyond the level of where our plants were planted. And this happened both times that we planted the plants. We would plant the plants, the water would recede. So that is also another issue and something that we're going to look to try and address in the future and see if they do perform better whenever we actually have our normal rainfall levels. However, I'd also like to finally draw your attention to our irises. And our irises, while they perform very poorly in our floating treatment wetland, and initially all received ratings of 1, as they looked really, really bad, they actually came back vigorously once they were transplanted both into the restoration project setting as well as into the container. And so this is an indication that even if a plant may not perform necessarily as fantastic in a floating treatment wetland situation, there's still possibilities for them post-harvest. So in summary, I kind of look at some math real quick. And so this is a very rough economic study, and so this is something we're looking at diving further into. And so if you look at a floating treatment wetland, it's about $450 a square foot for the mat, the cups, everything along those lines. So if we were, for example, to install a 500 square foot installation, that would be about $2,250. 500 square feet of floating treatment wetland also holds 1,250 plants. So a plug of Panicum virgatum, for example, is 85 cents a plug. So that costs us about $1,056. So if you had 10% loss, and you lost those 10% plants for whatever reason that may be, you were able to then sell the other 90% at $9 for a 1 gallon Panicum virgatum, you would be able to create sales or generate sales of $10,125. So looking at this, if you take your sales of $10,125 minus $2,250 and $1,056, you're looking at an approximate profit of $6,819. Now, I understand this does not include labor, doesn't include materials. There's a lot of other components to this that we need to look at. However, this is certainly a viable option for growers to use these floating treatment wetlands essentially as additional growing space. It's space that before is just open and empty, and now not only are we going to potentially turn a profit on them, but you have to consider the ecosystem services of them as well that factor into this. So this is something that our research is now diving further into, is doing an economic analysis and a comparison of these plants growing in floating treatment wetland versus in the nursery or the greenhouse itself. So stay tuned. But in conclusion, essentially, plants have variable nutrient removal efficiencies. However, we're finding that those plants that are sometimes used for ornamental purposes do perform well in these situations. Also, that plant mixtures tend to perform as an average of the plants used, which means that each of the individual plants are still performing at their maximum. You're just getting that kind of average performance for your pond or your water remediation. And then finally, most plants recovered well when transplanted into irrigated containers with slow-release fertilizers. There's still a little bit more research that needs to be done in terms of wetland restoration projects. But overall, what this means is that money equals opportunities, and this is a great option for growers to potentially find interest and engage in a water remediation technique. Thank you.